This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Did you hate PE at school? Did you always find ways to forget your uniform or feel sick when it was time for PE? And what made PE just so painful, embarrassing and dreaded for so many of us when we were at school? Well, a major study by London's Institute of Education actually shows that PE benefits kids in the classroom. So no matter a child's sporting ability, the more active kids are at school, the better they perform academically in class. So are you a PE teacher? How important is PE in our development through our school years? And not to become a professional athlete, but is it important to help us just have a healthy relationship with exercise, sport, and our own body, our own everyday lives? What makes a great PE teacher? Also this hour, Lily Allen has pretty much broken the internet. She's released her latest album and it's been labelled one of the harshest breakup albums ever written.
Did you fall in love with someone who isn't me? Why are we here talking about the sex?
So, is this the ultimate breakup album, or is she just airing dirty laundry? Have you listened to it?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So from getting changed in front of girls when you're embarrassed about how your body was changing to being picked last in those cruel lineups during PE, did you dread PE class? Did you try to find ways to avoid it? But is it actually really important for us? Is it important for us academically, not necessarily to get fit or to be a professional athlete, but is PE during school good for us in the classroom? A new major study that's been done by University College London's Institute of Education has actually shown that sport benefits kids in the classroom. And this doesn't matter what your ability of sport is like. Just simply being more active helps you perform better in class. So did you have a great PE teacher? Are you a PE teacher? Why is it important? And do we even take PE teachers seriously? Do you often have just fill-in PE teachers? This text, my PE teacher was horrible, a bullying woman, but when she went away for a term, we had an English PE teacher sub and he let us find the exercise that we loved. I'm forever grateful because he helped me find movement. But then this, I hated school, but the one thing I loved was PE. I looked forward to the weekly roster for classes and I always circled PE. I could never understand the kids that had a note to avoid it. I'm 63 and now I love my sport. Terry's in Box Hill. Morning, Terry.
Good morning, Rochelle. I didn't like PE. The teachers didn't really encourage the kids, the weaker kids, and I was one of the weaker ones, and I would find any reason to get out of a PE class, and I did extra music until they said, you better do some exercise because it's it's advisory, you know, for your health. But
and what about now, Terry? How do you feel about exercise now?
Oh, I don't do a lot of it, and I should. But it's really funny. I like watching sport on TV. I always like watching the Olympics and Commonwealth Games, and I like watching the tennis. And I admire what these people are capable of. But I mean, while I didn't excel in the sporting side at school, I excelled at music, so yeah. I kind of figure that one balances out the other, you know. And
you can have both, though, Terry, can't you? You can.
Well, you can, but you know, it was always the girl who had a busted finger in hockey when she had a piano exam. I mean,
and I just think PE maybe has changed so dramatically over the years. I know growing up, we didn't always have a dedicated PE teacher. Then there was the things that you just never looked forward to doing. If there was going to be team sports, there was the lineup, and you always knew maybe you're going to get picked last. You always knew who was going to get picked first. I just wonder how much it's improved since then. And really great PE teachers can not only help you create just a love of sport, but it can just help you feel better about yourself. It turns out research coming in from University's College London's Institute of Sport shows us that it's actually important for us academically as well. Ray's in Mount Eliza. Hi, Ray.
Hi, I'm the texter about the person with the note. So I could never understand why, you know, a lot of my teenage friends would just, around that time of, you know, the dreaded period and the time of the month, and out would come the note because that would be the excuse. I just couldn't work out why they had these issues. But then I realised it was nothing to do with that. It was all about trying to get out of sport. So, but I just found through life, like, I was always competitive, even as a young child. And I remember, you know, running down the backyard against my father, and, you know, he'd make me let me win and all of that. But then as I went on, and I didn't like school, but I went on and I found even in my jobs, I was always competitive with anything. So I guess it's just the way some people are. They're going to like sports, and they're going to continue that right through their life.
Really good to hear from you, Ray. Thank you. My kids go to a primary school where the PE teacher is astounding. He provides opportunities for kids to move their bodies no matter their ability or their skill. He just wants them to have fun, do their best. As a result, he's got the whole school involved in physical activity. He is a total legend, and we absolutely adore him. A big shout out to Mr. Evans at Campbell South Primary. There we go, Mr. Evans. Mine was Mr. Corboy. I wonder what he's doing now. I wonder if he's still making kids do the gate run. Oh, gosh, did I hate the gate run. Terry's in Dandenong Ranges. G'day, Terry.
G'day, Rich. How are you? I want to give a big shout out to the wonderful John Russell in his not too many years at University High School. I was one of those kids that was picked last for team sports. I wasn't good at footy. I wasn't good at basketball. But John was a rower. He was in the sweep oarsman for the Victorian Surf Boat. He's a life member at Torquay. Mm-hmm. I hope somebody who knows him is listening, because
you never know. What was his name again?
John Russell. His nickname was Moose. He was a big man, so he inspired us young fellas. But he was teaching us about health. He was teaching us about principles in life, and how a bit of hard work will pay off even if you're not the best athlete. He encouraged all the kids who weren't in the racing teams as well. He'd take rowing for sport and encourage them. And I think he taught me a lot of things about life. But I did call him not 2 years ago, and we spoke for about 2 hours.
Wow.
And just hats off to the guy. He remembered me. He remembered the guys who were in my team in my year. And we're talking the 1970s, early 70s.
Moose. John Russell. And I think that's the thing that this study has highlighted, Terry, is it's not about being athletic. It's showing us what physical activity, what participation in sport, what it can do for every aspect of our life. I mean, there's a text here that says things like, seriously, we've known this for about 40 years when it comes to how sport benefits us in the classroom or in other areas of our life. But for many of us, we did dread it. I just wonder how much it's changed. Jamie Bradnam is the Director of Sporting Schools at the Australian Sports Commission. Jamie, lots of people would say from the 70s saying, oh my God, I hated it, I avoided it. Lots of current PE teachers now are saying, love them, it's so important for every aspect of our life. Do we take the role of PE in school seriously?
Good morning, Michelle. Yeah, I think we do take it very seriously. And I'm one from the 90s, from attending school, and I absolutely loved PE in school. And like your callers there, shouting out to Moose, I think it was, I'd like to shout out to Miss Sullivan and Mr. Barrett in Sydney for helping me with my love of sport. I think we do take PE very seriously, and I do think we can really remember some of those negative experiences. But what we hear from children all around the country is so many of them, and in fact, I would say the majority, it is their favourite subject in school, particularly in primary school. But so many of them we hear that it's their favourite subject.
I mean, there's texts that alongside each other, you know, one that says those who can't teach become PE teachers, and then another that says I've taught PE for 40 years. This stereotype conversation is not just annoying, but it's insulting. And they sit side by side, and rightly so. I wonder whether schools over the years, I know at one point we didn't even have a PE teacher. It was like, oh, your English teacher or your maths teacher also took PE for a term or two terms or whatever it may be. Have we changed our perspective on the importance of a dedicated PE teacher?
I think we have not potentially changed the importance, but I certainly think the time that's allowed within school timetables can certainly be challenging to fit a really balanced education in. So, yes, there's certainly a lot of English teachers and maths teachers and librarians out there teaching sport as well. But I think it also shows that every teacher can, and every teacher with the right sort of enthusiasm and the right sort of experience can really get their kids involved in a variety of different sports. That's part of what we try and promote, and what we try and to help out teachers is to get as many different teachers involved, because active kids in the classrooms do behave better at school. They focus better, they remember more, they behave better. And like you said in the study, they even achieve higher results in literacy and numeracy.
Let's have a chat to Michael, who's in Ballarat. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're a PE teacher, Michael?
Yeah, PE teacher for 42 years. And I just wanted to back up what some of your recent callers have just said. Yeah, we're certainly when I was at my uni course, it was really driven into us about we were developed there to develop students or develop people, young people, through physical activity. And the developing elite sports people was just a secondary aim. But the main one was to develop people. So,
what made you want to be a PE teacher, Michael?
Well, actually, I didn't.
What did you want to be?
But I was glad I did. But I missed out on physiotherapy by, you know, about 0.3 of a mark or something.
Oh, yeah.
And thought, oh, I'll try this phys ed teaching because that's, you know, got anatomy and physiology, which I was interested in. I was also into sport myself, but anyway, once I got into it, I thought, oh, this is it. This is my job.
You loved it straight away.
I loved it, yeah.
What makes a great PE teacher, Michael?
Well, you've got to develop a rapport with students and, you know, care about your students and not just see them as vessels to be filled with knowledge or skills, just recognise their individuality and so on. And I think, you know, just patience, a bit of emotional resilience helps in secondary schools. Your own emotional resilience and just enthusiasm for being with people.
Michael, thank you. Jamie Bradnam is with you as well, Director of Sporting Schools at the Australian Sports Commission. Jamie, when we look at how, as adults, right, how important it is to just get fresh air, exercise, you know, the amount of steps we're told to do per day, how it makes us feel different in our everyday lives and longevity and prevention. Do I guess as a society, we look at the importance of that differently now?
Yeah, I think balance is so important. And I think as adults, we understand that a lot more. We understand the balance in our life to get outside can help with your brain and help you to process different things throughout your life. I think that's really important for our kids to understand that as well. And PE teachers are so important in that aspect. So we think they're some of the most important educators in schools. They don't just teach sport. They teach kids how to move, how to cooperate, how to persist, and I guess how to bounce back. And so many times in life, you will have things that you need to bounce back from. And I think PE and sport really helps you to learn some of those skills.
Gary's in Caulfield South. Morning, Gary.
Good morning.
What did you want to say?
Yeah. Okay, well, I was at one stage for a short while in Sydney a soccer coach for young kids, including my own. But aside from that, when my kids were in school, there was one other chap and myself who were huge supporters of sport being played in school and being prioritised as an important part of their overall curriculum. And I think that that's a big failing here in Australia, whereas in America, it's the other extreme. There, they prioritise sport above everything else in schools and universities and so forth. So I think you need to find a balance in the middle because, after all, let's face it, everybody knows, I don't know why they wasted their time, money in England to do a study on this. It's blatantly obvious that it's good for kids. It's good for their health, obviously. Gets the blood circulation going. Obviously, if you're going to sit in the classroom studying, that's going to, you know, health-wise, you need to have concentration, which it's going to help with. There are so many skills you learn. You learn about team play. You learn about concentration. You learn about motor skills. I mean, sports should be a huge part of our overall kids' schooling.
I think you're right, Gary, but I think what it highlights is the skill it takes to be a PE teacher, so you don't dread it. And for many of us, maybe finally, Jamie, you know, I mean, please tell me they don't do the lineup anymore where you've got to pick your teams and there's always, you know, the one kid, may or may not have been me, that was last to be picked. You know, that thing of, am I going to be embarrassed during this next 45 minutes? Has that been eliminated somewhat?
I think it has, certainly, Rochelle. I think you'll find that PE lessons are a lot more balanced and inclusive now. A lot of people, that is a real fearful memory of that happening at the time. And, of course, at the flip side, there were those who got picked first that liked the pride in that. There's a lot more balance now. So sports make a lot more different programs available for kids of all ages and abilities to be able to get involved as much as possible. So certainly I think there's a lot more balance, there's a lot more inclusivity, and there's a lot more ways that we can change things to make sure that everyone has a really good go.
And whenever I walk through the school gate to pick up my daughter and I see the one of the PE teachers, we've got a man and a woman, I always look at how comfortable they look, right? They get to wear runners and shorts all day, every day. And I'm like, good choice. Like, how comfortable. This is why they're so happy. It's just because they're comfortable, Jamie.
It's probably the best possible uniform you can get, isn't it? So in summertime, you get to wear shorts and runners, and then in wintertime, you get to wear the tracksuit pants, of course, to be more comfortable. But I think that comes in part of the nature and the way that they do things. So they're a lot more relaxed. There's a lot less intensity, I guess, and pressure on the measurements that are involved. And they get to be, for many kids, the best part of their day. So you've mentioned that there's a lot that didn't enjoy it, but for the majority, I would say it is the best part. So they really do enjoy getting outside and getting in the fresh air and hopefully a little bit of sunshine. And getting involved in as much sport as they possibly can.
Good on you, Jamie. Good to speak with you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jamie Bradenham, Director of Sporting Schools at the Australian Sports Commission. We've got a Deb in Richmond. Hi, Deb.
Hi there, Rochelle. How are you going?
Good. What do you want to say?
I want to just say that a few years ago when I was president of our school, primary school, for my daughters, we got new basketball courts in, and we as parents did a bit of a time and emotion study to look at the usage of those basketball courts, particularly by the young boys who felt it was their territory. And whilst I applaud the enthusiasm and the, you know, the attributes of your PE teachers that have rung in, it's more than that. It's an understanding about gender and about social expectations. And we were able to work with the teachers to make sure that there was equitable time given. But the girls wouldn't go on and get the boys off or take over the space. They had to be actively supported to do that.
I know. And it takes a lot of work to get new basketball courts at a school, Deb. Well done.
Yeah. No, it was great.
Been there, man.
Yeah, I know, but the school was with us all the way, but it wasn't an easy conversation to begin with, and I guess we just have to keep it front of mind.
Yep, and it's about making sure that everybody feels included. Deb, thank you. Coming up in just a moment, have you listened to Lily Allen's new album? It's called West End Girls. Rolling Stone have said that she turned a painful marriage into a powerful album. So is this the best breakup album, or is she just airing dirty laundry?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Did you fall in love with someone who isn't me? Why are we here talking about the sector?
I don't think I've ever heard the word vasectomy in a lyric and sung so sweetly. You're listening to one of the songs off Lily Allen's new album. It's called West End Girls. It's all about her divorce from her very famous US actor husband, David Harbour. You would know him from Stranger Things, where she discusses all throughout this album their open relationship and the rules that they had and the rules that he broke. Ryan Egan from Double J. I went down a rabbit hole today on yes. this album. I kind of went in a bit skeptical, I think, thinking, you know, this is just airing dirty laundry. Yeah. How much, like, because she has.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It is a novel. It is diary entries. There is nothing that she's held back. I have to say, I love it.
It's good, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's deep. It's raw.
Yeah.
It's surprising. There's text messages from Madeline.
We're going to hear a bit of that in a tick, yeah.
And there's, yeah, just some strange choices production-wise that keep you really engaged and yeah, just so much personality and drama.
So with breakup albums, this concept isn't new.
No.
The you know, breakup songs, revenge songs, we've had them over the decades. If yeah. you've got a classic that you want to talk about, 1-300-222-774, quite often there's rage, you know,
yep.
there's anger in them. This is soft and beautiful, this album, and it's a different type of storytelling, and I find that part of it fascinating.
Yeah, it's more like a diary entry breakup album, or even a series of text messages breakup albums, or letters left on the fridge, you know, little notes written to the person who's broken her heart, basically. It's not her first breakup album as well. Her last record was about the end of her previous divorce, about addiction, infidelity, and other themes that you find in this album as well. And the great breakup albums, of course, are, you know, are full with so many emotions.
Mm.
You know, some of them, like there's a PJ Harvey album, Rid of Me, which is so angry and so intense. And then you have albums like Tapestry and others that have gentleness to them, as well as, you know, some really raw and very real emotions and direct wording.
So you spoke about Madeline, who
yeah.
is one of the, what we say, characters or
character,
women.
Yeah.
Did she say whether or not she's real within the open relationship that
yeah.
they have? You know, Lily Allen says, well, you kind of broke the rules here with Madeline, and she reads out a series of text messages. This song is an earworm. It is stuck in my head. So here's just a little bit of the song Madeline.
But you're not a stranger, Madeline.
I hate that you're in so much pain right now. I really don't want to be the cause of any upset. He told me that you were aware this was going on and that he had your full consent. If he's lying about that, then please let me know, because I have my own feelings about dishonesty. Lies are not something that I want to get caught up in. You can reach out to me anytime, by the way, if you need any more details or you just need to vent or anything. Love and light, Madeline.
Love and light.
Love and light. I am obsessed.
Oh, me too. Oh, my gosh. I got chills listening to it.
And it's been how many years since she's released an album? A long time.
Yeah, it's a while. I think it's almost 7 years.
And what about the idea that who she's talking about is a hyper uber famous actor? So it's US actor David Harbour, of course, from Stranger Things. What does that do to him? Like, is this good? Is this?
I don't think it's good. Oh, I don't think it's going to be a good one. I mean, there is a lot of there's a celebrity gossip angle to this, and there is that heightened interest because of his fame as well as hers. I mean, she's really one of the most famous, particularly in Britain, pop stars around. So I think a lot of people are interested in that, and they're interested in reading into it, and the think pieces are coming thick and fast, and the character judgment is coming as well, and you know, having a song like that as well with that sort of text message. And she's talked about it being what she describes as autofiction, so it's autobiographical but it's fictional, so she's taking real events but changing them in a way to have more impact or to pull together different things that have happened to make it one thing. I think you see this in movies a lot where a range of different characters might become one character to serve the plot.
There isn't a magazine, a title, a newspaper, an Instagram feed that hasn't had a comment or something to say on this particular album. I don't know whether my algorithm is just feeding me this now because I am kind of getting slightly obsessed.
Could be.
When was the last time you saw a reaction and a global reaction and commentary around an album like this one, with praise too? It's four stars.
Yeah, look, it's been a while. I mean, there's some big albums that touch on breakups or infidelity. There's Beyoncé's Lemonade, which was a very big album at the time and talked, sort of spoke a bit about Jay-Z's infidelity in that record, although it had a range of other themes as well. There's been albums by Lorde, Melodrama, most recently in terms of pop stars. But again, that relationship wasn't with a super famous person. People have written songs that we now think of as being about particularly famous people, perhaps about a relationship with Mick Jagger or with,
yeah, and
you know,
can make up your own narrative. Yeah. Well, just to take you back, this is Beyoncé's Sorry.
Better call Becky with the good hair.
And like how people went searching for Madeline, people went searching for Becky with the good hair.
They did. And Jolene too. I think that Lily Allen song you played before as well about Madeline, it does have a Jolene lilt to it. There's a bit of banjo as well.
He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name Jolene. Easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene.
Is that not the ultimate? Oh, I played that song to my daughter the other week. That is proper, like, I mean, in terms of storytelling, naming names.
Yep.
Dolly Parton, and Sweet, right? So not the anger or the rage that we know from some of the breakup songs. 1-300-222-774. This is an interesting text. Ryan Egan is with you from Double J. We're talking about Lily Allen's new breakup album and why it's pretty much broken the internet. This, what would you say if this album was written by a man? And we spoke about this off air, actually, about whether or not it's mainly women who write breakup songs. Like, are there many? Nick Cave potentially wrote about, I think it was a PJ Harvey breaking his heart. I mean, who, do blokes write breakup songs or is it just women?
I mean, maybe women write better ones. maybe they write better songs generally. Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks, is a classic 70s breakup album and highly regarded in terms of its impact for people who have been going through breakups as well. I mean, interestingly, some breakup albums are give you comfort as well. And I think, I think men and women both want to dabble in breakups because the emotions are so raw and so big and so powerful. And you know, Lily Allen's talked about how she had a bit of writer's block or wasn't happy with what she was writing, but the bringing the emotions out and tackling the ideas around this breakup actually became the creative juices she needed to make the record.
I mentioned this on air with Raphael Epstein before, and Ben Law was in the studio. He's now a playwright and performing at the Arts Centre. And he referred to it, he said it was like a diary entry, but like a novel as well. And just the amount of story and storytelling that was in it, I could imagine that it would have taken a really long time to write. This, it just simply says Alanis Morissette. Now, I was watching, I love researching stories like this. I've basically just been Googling breakup songs and listening to great old music. So Alanis Morissette spoke about Order No and the reaction that she got to that. And at the time when she wrote it, she was renting and she was moving out of her apartment. And her landlord said to her, I love the fact that she was still renting. And anyhow, her landlord said to her, I didn't like your music when it first came out and I didn't like Order No, but then I got divorced and all of a sudden she understood this.
It's
how hard was it not to sing?
Oh, it's so tough. And also, good. A song about another famous person too, although it's, I don't think it's been totally confirmed, but it's about an American actor called David Coulier from Full House that she was dating. So,
I have not heard the words Full House.
Do you remember Full House?
Do I remember Full House? It's one of the best.
Oh, classic.
Ryan Egan, it's not just the contemporary, you know, there's everything from Carole King. What about Fleetwood Mac? They would be full of heartbreak and breakup songs, surely.
Well, they're kind of my favourite breakup albums because the people in the band are breaking up with each other.
Yeah,
you know, which is also even more sort of salacious and exciting.
So weird.
You know, and they're on stage singing to each other, you know, those songs as well. Go Your Own Way. Imagine looking over and singing that to the person you wrote it about on the album you made together.
So awkward.
Stevie.
Oh, she's so good. David's in Sale. Morning, David.
Good morning, all. How are you all?
Good. Breakup songs, breakup albums, revenge albums.
It is the best, most beautiful breakup song ever written, in my opinion, by George Jones, the American country singer, and it's called He Stopped Loving Her Today.
Who was the artist?
George Jones.
Yeah, George Jones.
And you've got to listen very closely to the lyrics to tell the story of him breaking up or she leaving him and he loving her for the rest of his life and he stopped loving her today, which was actually the day he died.
Oh. All right, we'll try and find it, David.
There are other artists who have recorded.
Here we go, David.
She told him you'll forget in time. As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind.
Oh,
that's a tough one.
That is. You know, when you were talking, thank you, David, when you were talking before about Fleetwood Mac and singing to each other and who was going out with who and who was breaking up with who, my brain went to ABBA straight away and lots of texts coming in particular Knowing Me, Knowing You by ABBA. I mean, they were sleeping with each other, breaking up with each other, divorcing each other, marrying each other. I mean, that would have been tricky. Where do you look on the stage for that one?
At your guitar.
That's why they're all shoegazing.
Pick someone in the crowd and just look at them.
John's in Smythesdale. Is it all about ABBA's all about breakup songs?
Yeah, it's very similar to Fleetwood Mac, really. But like you said, Knowing Me, Knowing You and The Winner Takes It All. Mm. I mean, how difficult would that have been?
I think they just kind of got used to it. It's what they, you know, it's how they... It's how they rolled there.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. This is... Here we go. What a weird band, really.
Amazing.
Love. It's still going.
Yeah,
I get to it.
It's a good one.
They've still got their head down, looking. No eye contact.
I don't want to talk.
No, no one wants to talk.
No.
The list is so long. Taylor Swift is the queen of writing from her diary.
Yeah.
And, of course, breakup songs. You've got Miley Cyrus with Flowers. That is a great song. I guess now that Lily Allen's album is everywhere, how do you, I mean, this is her second kind of breakup album. What?
Yeah.
The fact that it's so out there, so raw, the language in it is...
Yeah.
Pretty.
Some of it's quite explicit.
Very. And, yeah. Just talk sex toys, all sorts. Yeah. It's really full on. Can she write it like that now because you're not relying on radio play for people to listen to your music? Because some of the lyrics, some of the songs, now they won't get played, but people will listen to them. They'll just get downloaded.
I mean, she put out her first album in 2006, and that had a lot of explicit content in it as well. I think that audience who fell in love with that album and her honesty and the way she expressed herself in a way that was very contemporary, I think, have grown up now. Lily Allen's 40. So we're in a very different environment where people will listen to this on streaming, or they'll buy the album, they'll listen to it at home, and her audience have grown up with her. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why this album is also impacting those fans as well is that a lot of them have gone through divorce. They've had hard times, breakups, and they can identify with Lily's journey as well, and her getting to this point where she's had some pretty tough relationships and she's been treated, by the sound of it, pretty badly, and that'll resonate really strongly.
The video, I sound 1,000 years old when I was about to say the video clips. What do you call it? They still call video clips.
I call them video clips.
Thanks.
I'm also a little old, I guess. Music video?
Music videos. Video clips.
Yeah.
They're so...
The TikTok of it.
They're so good. A quick chat to William in Hawthorne. Hi, William.
Oh, hi. You asked the question little back about a guy's breakup album, and Beck did an album maybe 20 years ago called Sea Change. And it's a beautiful album, even just standing by itself. He's a brilliant songwriter.
Where's he been?
He's still around. He's touring a lot and he's got new stuff. He just did a duet with Peck as well, which is Peck and Beck.
There we go. That's going to rhyme. Yeah.
Yeah. Beck's music, his breakup album, Sea Change, is amazing.
Well, there's our answer to do men write breakup songs. We couldn't get through all of them today. Of course, there's Leonard Cohen. We haven't been able to play any of him. There's Adele, who is the classic breakup artist. I think what I've found fascinating about Lily Allen's latest album is the reaction to it, to be honest. And then the surprise that I felt when I listened to it and how much I liked it.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, it's as I said before, there's some really incredible musical moments in it. So even if you don't have to have a strong connection to the themes of the album, you'll find something in there. It's very pop. It's got a bit of auto-tune. So if that sort of sound is not to your liking, you may have to push through. But then it's got really beautiful and touching and really soft moments as well. I think she's an incredible lyricist and she has a fantastic ear. She works with really amazing people. She apparently wrote this in only about 10 days.
Wow.
Which is also...
That's getting it out. That's getting it off your chest.
Get it out. Just go hard. Get out the red pen. Just, you know, underline his name multiple times. You know, so like, I mean, hats off for someone who can channel those feelings that sometimes are really hard to articulate. Like, I think for a lot of us, those feelings of being betrayed and going through a really difficult time can be really hard to put into words, but that's why we have artists to do it for us.
Well, this is the thing, and to quote Alanis Morissette, she said, it starts out as my pain and my journey, and then once it's released, it's for everyone else.
That's
and
right.
Maybe that's what Lily Allen's been doing as well. It's called West End Girl. You've been seeing it all over the internet. I'm going to be listening to it more. Ryan, it's always good to have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle.
Ryan Egan from Double J. Coming up next, when you go shopping, when you go to your local park, when you go to your local train station, is there anywhere for you to sit? Is finding an outdoor seat, is finding somewhere to rest becoming impossible?
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
I love the steady stream of heartbreak, breakup songs, revenge songs coming through. We might try and get back to them a little later in the program. But I wonder whether you've noticed, and maybe it's when your back is sore, you're carrying too much stuff, or especially as we get a bit older, that if you need to sit and rest when you're out and about, that it's getting really tricky. Is there just a lack of public seats where you live, where you work, where you travel? So if you're at your local park, can you sit down? If you're at your local supermarket or down your high street or at one of those really busy shopping centres, is there somewhere to sit down? What about your local train station or bus stop? Are there any seats at all? So in New York, a new $1 billion train station has just been built. But there's a really noticeable lack of places to sit. There are benches to lean on, but there's nowhere to sit. So there are images of commuters who are quite literally sitting on the ground. So here in Victoria, in our city now, where we're building train stations and new platforms at a rapid rate, are we following New York City, or are we creating places to sit down? Are we creating hostile or inclusive environments? Rory Hyde is an architecture professor at Melbourne University. Rory, the term hostile furniture design, which a lot of it is ensuring that homeless people basically can't sleep there and can't be comfortable. But I'm even noticing it on public transport more and in public places where you can lean against something, but you can't sit.
Yeah, hi, Rochelle. It's a really interesting part of design. You know, we think about furniture design, industrial design as being comfortable, as being welcoming, generous, give us an opportunity to take a load off, to even sit and enjoy a view. And yet designers seem to be in this kind of trying to thread the needle, playing this game of how can we make a bench that's usable but not comfortable enough that you could stay there for a long time or sleep on it or lie down or actually, you know, put your whole weight on it even. So we're in this very bizarre place where we're trying to make, you know, create furniture but also not at the same time.
I was paying attention the other day because I had heaps of groceries and I was waiting for my husband. It had been a long day and I was like, oh, I just want to sit down. Right? Yeah. And there was nowhere to sit.
Yeah.
And that was out of the front of a main street, out the front of a supermarket. And then after reading this article, it really did get me thinking. It was a New York-based article, and they were looking actually at the origins of the New York park bench, you know, in Central Park, the design behind and the reasoning behind why we have, as you just said, a place to sit and enjoy the view. And since then, I started to just pay attention to where there are outdoor bench seats and what the view is that you take in. Sometimes the view is lovely and sometimes the view is terrible. Do we even value just park benches, outdoor seating at all anymore?
I don't think so. No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, that's certainly my experience as well. You know, there's something beautiful about being able to sit outside and not have feel obliged to pay for coffee to sit at that public seat. I think that our main streets should be literally lined with benches wherever you need to sit down. That to me is a kind of sign of civic generosity, of a sort of respect and celebration of us as people and pedestrians. And instead we're sort of trying to, I don't know, exclude that way of using the city because we're afraid of some particular groups of people, like homeless people, as you say.
And when you see a plaque that's on a bench seat that's been important to someone, I always stop and read them. There's something there's something beautiful about just saying, okay, two people shared or one person, this space was important to them and the view was important to them. Where do we fit globally, Rory, when it comes to outdoor public architecture? Do we think about the public and how we use outdoor space well in Victoria?
I think we do. Look, I think we've got a really great level of urban design and public realm design here, and the City of Melbourne in particular has an amazing department there who, you know, think about these things all day and all night. And you can see that in Bourke Street Mall, in City Square, in South Bank, in and the, you know, really high quality bits of furniture that you'll see around. I'm thinking particularly of the bendy silver seats made out of series of rods.
Oh, yes.
Curved together. We see those. That's one of the standard designs in Melbourne. And then the other one is the one with the green metal ends and timber slats coming together, which you see around, let's say, in botanic gardens or outside the State Library and some of the sort of major public spaces. That's another really a standard design from the 80s, which we're still building, and a little nod to Art Nouveau and a kind of French style to it. So I think we've got some great public furniture here. But as I said earlier, and as you've mentioned, probably not enough of it. It's probably still quite controlling. Globally, though, I haven't seen a lot of what I have seen in London is things like spikes along windowsills to prevent people from lying down. I mean, that to me is really hostile. You know, it's one thing to have a bench with an armrest in the middle, but another thing to sort of treat people almost like pigeons to keep them off the top of a wall. You know, there's something very dark about that. I don't think we're there quite yet in Melbourne.
Public architecture, public furniture, what does it tell us about how inclusive our communities are? So not only we've also, you know, we've mentioned for homeless people and making it impossible for them to be able to lie down and to rest. If you're aging, if you live with a disability, what does our public architecture tell us about how inclusive we are or aren't?
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of rules around this. For example, all new buildings need to be accessible, of course, to people with different abilities. And that access now needs to be together. So you can't just have, trundle yourself around to the back door if you're in a wheelchair while everybody else walks through the front. Those entries need to be together now, which is part of the regulations, which I think is a really good thing. And I recently saw an example, again, of public furniture, of a park bench. This was in Faulkner Park, and you might have seen them, where one of the – it's like a picnic table, and one of the sides, the benches, isn't the full width, so that somebody in a wheelchair could wheel themselves up and join that lunch or whatever it is. So, the role of design in shaping who can be invited, who's included, is really critical. And the flip side is design is often used to exclude people. And who we decide is included or excluded, I think, is really interesting. It says a lot about the society.
This text, I go everywhere carrying a backpack which has a camping seat attached. Now, that's being organised.
Wow.
And others, I feel tranquil just looking at this seat that I snapped in Beaumaris one afternoon. It's near where I work. And I think I'll forever pay attention now, Rory, to not only the seat but where it is and the view that it takes in and whether or not we consider that. In New York, just my final question to you is we're looking at the, you know, $1 billion train station that's being built where people are literally sitting on the ground because there's no seats. We are building a lot of train stations and platforms at the moment. Do we have enough places to sit?
I think so. I hope so. I haven't been into any of the new stations, but certainly the new public realm around Melbourne Uni, where one of those stations is for the metro that runs through the city. Lots of kind of ledges, you would say, less sort of deliberate seats and benches, but lots of ledges, places for people to perch. And as long as you're in the sun and there's a nice view, I think that's good start.
Good to speak with you, Rory. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle.
Rory Hyde, architecture professor at Melbourne University, talking hostile designs. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.